Hey, everyone. If managing your business financials is kind of making your hair gray, you don't want to miss this web class April 8th featuring the one and only Matt Reisinger. Matt and I are going to be teaming up to teach you the least painful way to track your budgets, do proper forecasting, and monitor overhead using our foolproof templates. What good margins actually look like in your industry so you can take out the guesswork and have something to benchmark yourself against. And lessons learned from Matt on his way to becoming an industry titan. If you know that now is the time to start making changes, but the thought of it kind of makes you nauseous, this web class is for you. April 8th, register in the link in the description, and I'll see you there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Todd Herman is a peak performance coach who works with everyone from billionaires to Olympians to Kobe Bryant. May he rest in peace. Whether we realize it or not, we all play characters in our lives. This idea, this notion that we should unashamedly show up as our own unique self to all settings in life, like it sounds good, but in reality, it's just an oversimplification of the truth. Like think about it. There's you, the CEO, you, the friend. There's you, the salesperson, you, the mom, you, the dad. There's you, the amateur train collector. I don't know, you, the PS5 enthusiast, you, the operations manager. You understand where I'm going with this. We have versions of ourselves. Does that make you disingenuous? Does it make you inauthentic? Not at all. We are multifaceted beings. And if you can't see that, like you're just not paying attention. So Todd's book, The Alter Ego Effect, I loved it because it explains why understanding and actually investing in these different archetypes of the self is one of the most powerful performance cheat codes available to us. And today's conversation is all about how to harness it. This was a fun one. Sorry for swearing. I hope you enjoy. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Todd, welcome to the podcast. It's really good to have you.
Benji, thanks for having me on.
Clark Kent or Superman, which one's the alter ego and who's actually the real person?
So I'm going to do a pregnant pause, as we would call it in the media business, to let the person who's listening answer that question in their own mind before I give them the answer. While the answer is the alter ego is Clark Kent. You know, I've posed that question to people on stages for 20 plus years, and most everyone will get it wrong because people's context of superheroes is the superhero is the alter ego. But in this case, Clark Kent is the alter ego because Superman used him to be able to go unnoticed in society and see what it's like to be this species called a human. But the real person that's there or thing that's there is Khalil or Superman.
We're going to get into the whole sort of framework that you teach, but why is that way that you orient that idea? This is the real person. This is not. Why is that an important concept to get clear on here at the outset?
Well, one of the, I'd say, more viral images that's out there that people in the self-help and personal development world use is that image of a small kitten sitting in front of a mirror and they're seeing the reflection of a lion.
Right.
But that's not really how most people operate. Most people operate as lions looking into a mirror and seeing the reflection of a kitten.
Strange.
So their perception of what they see about themselves is a lot less than what they actually are.
Where does that? I know what you're saying. It rings profoundly true, but I can't understand why that's the case.
Well, I mean, there's lots of different reasons why it happens for human beings. One is societal pressures, cultural pressures, the way that you were maybe brought up in some ways where you kind of took whatever energy or courage or you know, boldness and goals that you had and you muted them down for whatever reason. People are carrying around, you know, emotional dead weight, which holds them back. They can't see themselves being able to do it because no one from my family or no one from where I'm from can go and do that sort of thing. There's a ton of different reasons. Environmental, you know, like people from our community can't do it. And so they stop taking action towards the things that they want. And then over time, that even starts to wear away at someone's level of self-efficacy. Mm. Self-efficacy is just, you know, my belief in my ability to make something happen. And so over time, the reflection becomes a kitten. And yet all along, you're actually carrying around a lion that's there. That's why the framing of the real version is Superman, Khalil, not Clark Kent, the mild-mannered person who's going around and being accepted by society. Most people are just going around trying to get accepted by other people.
Yeah, and what a pity to live as a kitten and realize in hindsight that you were a lion the whole time. What a waste. What a shame. Where does the term alter ego, like, there's got to be an origin. Like, we sort of use it interchangeably. You hear it all the time, but like, where does this come from? And can you maybe unpack up the history, a brief history of the term, if you will?
Yeah. So the term alter ego was first coined in 44 BC by this guy, Cicero, who's a very famous Roman statesman and philosopher. And he was actually coining it or explaining it in a letter to a friend. So imagine this, kind of like other people go and get advice on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, or whatever nowadays. Someone, a good friend of his, reached out to him and he was caravanning at the time and said, "Hey man, like, you've crushed it in life. And any advice that you've got that you could pass along?" And so amongst his narrative that he was writing back, he said, "You know, there's this ability that I've had where I reinvented myself. And I call it an alter ego, which really means the other I or trusted friend within." And we all know how important it is to have mentors. I mean, that's a part of your guys' community. We know how important it is to have good people around us who support and encourage us or hold us accountable to the things that we say that we want to go and do. But most people don't think about how you can bring that same idea between the 6 inches of your ears. And that's where I've lived for 28 plus years, working with the most elite athletes and humans on the planet, not just in sport, but in business and entertainment. And the alter ego is a very powerful concept and tool that you can use to help you more gracefully and more creatively beat resistance.
So there's kind of two avenues one could take here. One is, you know, be the lion, not the kitten, because it feels good and it's nice and there's sort of touchy-feely reasons, which is great too. The other angle is very much like a performance lens. Like you do this because you play better. What's the saying? We had a really like fun mindset guy on the pod the other day, a year ago or so. He's like, "Let's think some better thoughts so we can feel some better feelings so we can score some more goals." And I was just like, I like it when it's framed like that, you know?
Sure.
Why have you found this whole concept so relevant in the context of performance? And why have you devoted a huge chunk of your life studying it, writing about it, talking about it with Stage, implementing it with high performers?
Yeah, the more important part of that sequence is implementing it and then studying it afterwards. This is my problem and why I've thrown a lot of punches at the people who are, let's say, peers of mine, because I'm not here to make friends with people who do what I do. I'm here to actually get results for people. And where all of this whole idea came from was when I started working with higher and higher caliber athletes, one of the things that kept those that were competing at a consistent level in common was that they would use a persona, a character, a specific identity, how they would see themselves when they go out there. You know, people talk about flipping the switch and all that, and all those things are great platitudes, but give me some meat and potatoes. Like, give me actually something that's practical. Like, even the guy that you said who was a mindset person who said, "I just want to think some better thoughts, I can feel some better feelings." Like, that's pretty, but that means that person, I can tell right away that person probably doesn't really work with elite human beings. Because the reality is, most of the best stuff is an outside in approach. Meaning you can actually just do things and that will start to shift and change how you feel about something and think about something. Okay. Like if you want to truly try and own the shit that's between the 6 inches of your ears and try and control thoughts, good f-ing luck.
Right.
Okay. So instead, I'd much rather having the contractor who's listening right now start just doing things differently, being more intentional about how you're going to go and show up out there. Mm. Okay. Like, and by the way, like this concept doesn't have to be used by everybody. And I'm not going to be your favorite podcast guest by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying, like, hey, if you want to be someone who achieves something that's beyond the ordinary, then you've got to start doing some extraordinary things. And you've got to start doing things that are a little bit different than what everyone else says.
Yeah. Is it too simplistic to say that you have developed a framework and a process to follow? In other words, doing things that helps people, quote unquote, flick the switch on demand so that they can be the person they need to be in the context, in the environment, in the arena, in the sales call, whatever, be the person they need to be to get the result they want.
Yeah. So the first thing that I would say to people is that I want them to accept is everything in life is a performance. Everything is a performance.
Say more about that.
Okay. So when you go home tonight and you walk through the door and you greet the family, if you've got a family, performance is just simply the dotted line or the hyphen between the years of your life. How did you go and perform? So we can start breaking it down further. So the hyphen from 5 p.m. to 10 o'clock p.m. when you lay your head on your pillow tonight, there's a performance that you did. And that how I know that is I can take a look at your results. Fought with my wife when I got home or yelling at the kids. Okay, well, that sounds like you had a pretty performance then. You didn't come in with the right attitude and you brought in CEO or contractor owner person and you brought them into the house and you started treating everyone like your f-ing employees. Right. Okay. So like I've stood on stages in front of billionaires and almost to a letter, every single person who wanted to go and take this concept and apply it, wanted to go and apply it in their context of being a father or a husband, because that is the one area of their life where they feel like they're under indexing because they are achievers. Mm. Like the guys that are listening to this, like, get it in your head. You're f-ing weird, okay?
Right.
You're listening to a podcast right now about improving your life. That's not normal, okay? 97.5% of people will not ever do something like this. So automatically, the fact that you're listening to this, and whether you like me or not, again, I don't care, you're different. Now, because you're different, you better be doing some different things. And you probably have different aspirations and ambitions than even some of the friends that you have. Accept that. Okay? That's okay.
Yeah.
So I'm asking people to accept the idea everything's a performance. And because everything's a performance, now I want to try and engineer a version of Benji in those different contexts of your life. The reporter, the interviewer guy, because the version of you that's here right now is probably going to be slightly different than, you know, another area of your life. It should be, because what it takes to be a great interviewer is a different skill set than being a great CEO.
Let's go. Okay, this is so interesting. Everything that you're saying connects the dots to me in my lived experience. There's a platitude that I've heard surfaced around the sales world for a long time, and I hate platitudes. And they sort of it's this bit that they use where they go, you know, if you show up to the sales call as a different person than who you show up to your kids as, you're doing the sales call wrong. And I'm like, what the f- are you talking about? Like that is just something that sounds good on stage. That like that's literally it. There's no substance to that at all. In my lived experience, you nailed it. And I actually started to talk about this with my team a little bit more explicitly so they get it. I'm like, guys, this is a character. Like this person in this room right now with the lights is a character. That's not the same person that you're going to get on the weekend. It's not the same person that you're going to get in a strategy meeting where it's just us eight people putting our heads together. It's not who we're going to get, who you're going to get in a conflict conversation. And it's actually substantially different than the person you're going to get on a stage or at a trade show. There's like these different environments and those different environments require different characters. And I found it very useful to just just call it what it is. Like just understand it in that lens versus
by the way, on that, Benji, that's actually how the people who are getting markedly different results in life.
Are doing it.
That's how they actually think. Right. Now, here's the issue. Most of them can't, like you, how you just articulated it, that's a very high level of articulation. Most people don't have the vocabulary or the awareness to be able to say what they recognize as something that's resonant within them.
Right.
Okay. Now, this is important because when my guys or girls are in front of the podium getting interviewed by ESPN or TSN in Canada or Sky Sports over in Europe, they will not actually tell people what they actually think because it's going to make them sound like they would be nowadays a narcissistic, egotistical person. And that's my problem with a lot of the self-help and personal development stuff is it's written by slightly above average people for average people because these people haven't actually spent time in the room with Kobe Bryant like I did or Cristiano Ronaldo like I did. And then you go to the CEOs and how they think. The point is you're right. If we start to view ourselves as having many roles that we play in life, life actually becomes a lot easier.
It's so much easier, Todd. It's so much easier. It's like this idea that we have to pretend like we're this sort of
consistently
positive,
same person across
every
single.
Yeah, like it's just kind of exhausting. No. Like it's just like, first of all, it's not real. And second of all, like it gets really tiring to try to live under a false pretense that you are this sort of, positive and like outgoing and likable and honest and like, and all these terms that you might use to describe. And I'm that way all the time. I just find I'm a very pragmatic person for anyone that knows me would know. And so when things are just like, I don't see how this works in real life, I usually drop them very quickly. And in my mind, it's like, no, there's like a savage version of Benji. There's quite a nice version of Benji. There's a really caring version of Benji. There's a really uncaring version of Benji. And I do have to, unfortunately, and anyone that's playing business at any level has to do that too. And it's just a much easier framework. It's kind of like, I feel like we're like, oh, thank God. Okay, this is way easier that you're saying this is normal, healthy, and in fact, conducive to performance.
Sure. And then, okay, so now let's actually add some intellectual meat on the bone here as well. So Carl Jung, who was a very famous, person in the world of psychology back in the 1920s and 30s, he's the one who basically coined the terminology of archetypes. All right.
One of my favorite words ever, by the way. I use it all the time.
Yeah. And especially for someone, and again, that makes sense for someone who's going to be trying to develop salespeople because there's certain types of archetypes. Now, to the layperson, what's an archetype? An archetype is basically thinking of it like a mental model or a character. And there's roughly 12 of them that Carl Jung unpacked. There's the ruler archetype. And that's someone who, when you think of ruler, people are like, oh, someone who's lording over. No. In the most positive form of the ruler, they actually want prosperity for everybody. There's a lot of people that are in business and entrepreneurs that are actually ruler archetypes by nature because the way that they're trying to create prosperity for all the people in their business. Now, the negative side of a ruler is when you're triggered, when you go into the shadow side of that ruler, is you become controlling and domineering over people.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you're emotionally on the low point, that's what you're going to do. But anyway, there's 12 of these. There's the warrior archetype. That's the classic hero that you would see in many movies. Someone who's pursuing a goal. A lot of athletes are very much warrior archetypes. The driving thing behind a warrior archetype is mastery of something. There's the jester archetype. A lot of comedians are jester archetypes. There's the magician. Anyway, point is, if you fell into the trap of trying to be consistently the same human being in every situation, you're falling prey to just being one of these archetypes. Whereas Carl Jung, his whole thesis was, you become a really whole human being when you know how to navigate all of these different archetypes. Mm. Right, the caregiver archetype, the just, you know that you can bring humor to something, or you know how to go after the mastery and be very goal directed on something. You know how to bring prosperity in the ruler archetype. So anyway, all of this concept of alter ego, which is just a very useful tool that I've helped people who are, you know, striving or, you know, doing some very difficult things. Knowing how to use your identity, that's one of the best tools that you can put on your tool belt. Now, I don't care if someone goes and uses an alter ego, but what I do care about is that I introduce the concept to people that, listen, your identity, how you see yourself in the contexts of the different roles you play and being very intentional about how you show up, that's really powerful.
Let's make this really practical then. I mean, and by the way, guys, I got the chance to read the book over the last 10 days. And we'll link it in the description. I cannot recommend it enough, but I would love to do, just while we have Todd in this interview, like a sort of a 101 level roadmap of the alter ego effect and make it very practical for the listeners. Like how do they find and develop their own alter ego, Todd?
So one, it's a very creative process and it's playful. Okay. So that's important for me to just let people know, just from a high level. One of the things that makes this work is you've already done it. Every human being on the planet, I've stood in front of hundreds of thousands, millions of people on stages over the last 30 years. And I said, you know, whether that's in Cape Town, South Africa, or it's in Nigeria, or it's over here in North America, you've all done it because we do it as kids naturally. Because there's no concept of identity yet until you're eight, until you reach about the age of eight. You're very playful. You know, one second you're, you know, Wayne Gretzky out on your front driveway, or Connor McDavid, or your LeBron James, or Kobe Bryant, or whoever it is. And why do we do that? Because you're like, oh, you know what? I'm just a pint-sized little right now. But what if? How could I play if I was that person? So it opens up your mind because you have an idea as to what that person, that's the alter ego in action right there. So you do it naturally as kids. And I say playfulness because the final golden key for me that helps to unlock flow state in anybody is an attitude of playfulness. If you take yourself way too seriously, any athlete will tell you, if I'm taking the outcome of the game too seriously, boom, that's when you become too tense or stressed.
Playing too
or
tight.
Anxious. Yeah, you play tight. So now let's be practical with it. Okay, so that's why it's there, playful, it's being very intentional. Step number one, always, we don't have an alter ego for our entire life. It's always in context of a role that we play. So I just tell people, practically, if you're listening, what's one area of your life where you feel like you're either under-indexing or it's giving you the most stress, or it's just an area that you'd like to bring a little bit more, you know, calm, relaxed, or fun with? Okay, so that could be dad mode. That could be the dad version of you. That could be, you know what? I'm putting on some few extra LBs. So that means the athlete version of me has not been nurtured at all. All right. So where it's an area of your life. So we always bring it out for just one area.
Do you want to use me as an example?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do the health thing. Let's use the health thing. Doesn't matter the backstory, but I found myself 7 months ago. I'm like, it doesn't matter that I was a nationally ranked swimmer when I was 18. It doesn't matter that I was raised by a holistic mom and understand nutrition well. I am 32 and I'm objectively 30 pounds heavier than I need to be. And this, I need to fix this. So that was me. That was my story. If you just find that as a useful way to work through this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect. So now that we've got the one role that you have, which is the role of the health caretaker of your life. Mm-hmm. Like there's a version of you that's, I'm built to take care of this body for Todd. Okay. That's the athlete. I'm just going to call him the athlete. All right. So what's frustrating you? This is like getting into step two. Now what's frustrating you about that? Like what are the traits or what's the way that you're showing up now or not showing up as an athlete or someone who's taking care of yourself?
Yeah. Energy levels. And then how I looked in pictures. I'm just like, I'm bothered by this. I don't have energy at 2 p.m. in the afternoon when I really need it because I have three more meetings to go. And every time I see a picture on Facebook come up of me with my friends, I'm like, ugh, no way.
Yeah. So that's telling you what the outcome is, but that still doesn't tell me what is the way that you are or are not approaching taking care of your body. I'll give you a quick example. So an alter ego that I developed when I first started building my company. This is 1997. I would go to bed at night with all these ideas as to people that I'm going to call, I'm going to book things, and I'm going to, you know, get myself some speeches or workshops in Edmonton, Alberta, which is where I started my company at the time. And then the very next day I'd end it and I didn't make the phone calls. Okay. Happens to a lot of people. So this is what I wanted. I wanted X, which was I wanted a thriving practice and I wanted to be known as a mental game guy. So what do you want to be known for now? What's this? So here you are, we've chosen it. Now, what do you want? Mm-hmm. And then I want to lower the drawbridge down on this now to be practical. Well, I was being, what was the issue that I was having? Well, I was being indecisive. I was insecure because when I really got down to it, I mean, I was 21. I looked like I was 12 years old. And here I am talking about mental game, but I don't have a bunch of letters behind my name and I don't have 3 best-selling books. These were literally rules that I had in my head that before you get booked on a stage, you have to have 3 best-selling books and you have to have a bunch of letters behind your name. Well, I wasn't gonna get any of those things anytime soon. So I lacked confidence and I was indecisive because I wasn't taking action. And then the other third thing was I wasn't being very articulate. When it came to expressing to people what it was that I did and the value that I had for people, I just didn't say it in the right words. Mm-hmm. Now we get to step 3. Now that I define my traits that I am not or that I am expressing right now, what do I want? Well, I want to be confident, decisive, and articulate. I want those 3 things. For that role, which was I was hiring the alter ego to be the promoter of Todd's stuff. That's what I was really needing. Some people would call it salesperson. It really is a promoter because I did have the belief that I was a very good coach because my track record was starting to prove that. But I just, you know what? I wasn't selling myself.
What do you do with those traits? Do you sit down and you mind map and write a character named Super Todd and you give him these traits and you become him? Do you pick from a comic book and say, I really liked Spider-Man?
Skipping ahead on me, Benji. We're trying to be practical here. Step 1 was identify the role in your life.
Identify the role.
Yeah. And then what's frustrating you about it?
Yeah.
But the way that you are currently showing up or that you're not even and you're completely avoiding it. Like, because there's some people here who like you might be going to the gym and you might be active right now, but you're not being disciplined with it. You're not being consistent with it.
Well, that's actually, can I just share? That's exactly what was happening. I literally ran a marathon last fall at 267 pounds. And I'm like, this is like, so in other words, active, like I'm doing this stuff. It's not like I'm sitting at home, like I'm doing this stuff. But yeah. I'm like, this makes no, I'm not getting the results for the time put into this. There is something broken with this equation. And you know, it's, none of it is going to surprise people. It's knowledge around food. It's basic macro tracking. It is, frankly, just because you go to the gym doesn't mean you're going as hard as you need to be going. It's sleep and some stress and mindset stuff. It's all the same thing that any other trainer is going to tell you. Anyway, it was literally what you just expressed. It was maybe more going through the motions than truly, truly grabbing the result I wanted by the jugular.
The other thing that goes with that too, and this goes to probably, you guys probably talk about this with the system that you give contractors as well, is one of the big issues that people have about why they're not getting results in whatever area of their life is because they actually don't have a clear picture in their mind of what it is that they're trying to create. Yeah. The brain is teleological. It's very much a goal-seeking mechanism. Like it's constantly trying to target in on something and most people don't use it quite right. You know, in this context of the health or the athlete version of you, getting that clear picture of what I don't want, which can help you create what you do want, can start to strip away and it helps to activate this character, this alter ego that we want. Okay, so now the flip of this then to the third step is, well, what are the traits that you do want? And then to your point about comic books, is there anyone or anything that already has these traits that I'm inspired by? So we can start with, well, I want to be confident, decisive, and articulate. And I immediately knew who had those things because I've kind of lived with heroes in my mind for a long time. And that was, confidence was Benjamin Franklin. I've read his biography so many times. At that point in time, I'd probably read it about 6 times. But I don't know that I've known or read about anybody who has shape-shifted more in their entire life and been successful at it. Meaning, By the time he was 13, he was the most widely followed journalist or writer in America. And he wrote under a pen name, Charles Duguid. That was his alter ego. Why did he write under Charles Duguid? Because his brother owned a newspaper and wouldn't publish any of his stuff. So he started writing in as Charles Duguid. And now all of a sudden, his brother started publishing his stuff. Then he gets into politics. He was a successful inventor and business owner. Then he goes over and he's the ambassador and diplomat overseas. Like, he's just super inspiring. That takes a level of confidence and self-assuredness. So I wanted that. Mm-hmm. And then the third one, decisive, for me, it was Superman. I mean, I grew up with the 1970s Superman. And, you know, going to the phone booth, boom, changed. And then he was just man of action. Mm-hmm. That was the theme. Mm-hmm. What was I? I was a man of inaction at that time. So man of action. And then the third one, articulate, well, I fell in love with this guy, Joseph Campbell, who invented the idea of the hero's journey and wrote many books, The Power of Myth and Mythology. And I saw him in 1986 getting interviewed by this guy, Bill Moyers, on PBS. And I was just like, he paints your ears with his words. Like, he's just so articulate. That was what I was aspiring to want to be like. So I had my three heroes now in my head. And I knew the traits that I wanted: confident, decisive, articulate, Benjamin Franklin, Superman, and Joseph Campbell, which then gets us into step four. And by the way, do they have to be real people? No, they don't, right? When I created the Black Mamba with Kobe, the whole reason why we chose a snake was because he was so concerned about what was happening at that time, which was 2003. It was during the sexual assault trial. That's when I came in to work with him. He was really over-indexing about what it was going to be like that season when it came to the fan perspective and the trash talk that he was going to get. So I explained to him about, in the animal kingdom, there's open loop animals and closed loop animals. Open loop animals are animals we feed off of each other's energy. Okay. Human beings are that way. Like, if you and I had this interview in studio, there's going to be a different dynamic that's there. Right. But we're so f-ing good at what we do. We can do it over Zoom and, you know, Riverside or wherever right now. But that's open loop. Like, dogs are that way. They feed off of the energy of another dog. Cats, mammals are that way. Then there's closed loop animals, snakes and spiders. They do not survive off of the energy of each other. All right. So, and I shared that with him. I don't share that with everybody, but him I shared that with, because very intellectual guy. He loved learning new things. I thin sliced him really quickly. And he's like, oh, that's amazing. And I'm like, yeah, so we need to build a version of you that's going out on that court that's closed loop. That doesn't mean it has to be an animal. It could have been a machine as well. It could have been a robot, right? So the original alter ego wasn't the Black Mamba. It was just a snake. And we didn't build it right there in that moment. I kind of gave him some homework to do. The point about all this is that our identity is an iterative process. How you become Benji has developed over time. So that means we don't pick an alter ego typically right out of the gate that's perfect and flawless.
Right. It has to work with it.
Many times. But it can iterate. Mm-hmm. So I just say to people, like, no, you can be inspired by anything. Sasha Fierce, or Beyonce, she created Sasha Fierce, wasn't based on really anything. Mm-hmm. It was just based on an energy that she wanted to bring into that space on stage, which was being more fierce. Why? Because, like I unpack in the book, she was a gospel singing girl in Houston, Texas, grew up in a religious and gospel environment. Now all of a sudden her dad has her in a singing troupe with seven other girls where she's asked to sing pop songs with provocative lyrics, and they're doing dance routines on stage that she never did before, standing in front of the congregation. Mm-hmm. Of course it would challenge. That's logical for people to understand that it would challenge that girl's sense of what's right, what's wrong, right? Like, we're not supposed to shake our hips like this. I'm only 16 years old. Like, that's so Sasha Fierce was born out of a need, just like the Black Mamba was born out of a need. Super Richard, which was mine, you know, this that promoter version for Todd, it was born out of a need. I wanted to pursue these ambitions. Mm-hmm. I didn't want whatever that resistance is that's within to get in my way. And that's what's very useful about this is it leverages our creative imagination. And that is one of the superpowers that human beings have that nothing else has.
So what would be your advice to a contractor listening to this? And I guarantee you there'd be a whole bunch of them who are like, this like weirdly makes sense. Like I somehow like knew this already.
Better yeah. makes sense because it does make sense. But it's practical.
You know what I mean? Like it's one of these things that people maybe like knew already but haven't put into words or they've experienced with but they haven't heard it articulated for them. And now that you put some structure around it and some language yeah. around it, I think it's a little bit more concrete, let's say. So for yep. someone that is sort of going, yeah, this is how it works. What is the step-by-step process for them to go ahead and start making a few different archetypes, a few different alter egos for themselves, for the various different environments that they need to perform their best at? And I would say for an average person who owns a business, like, I don't know, I'm just kind of guessing, there's probably, I don't know, 8 to 10, maybe more different settings that you're going to need to own at least.
That's what's challenging, but that's the beautiful thing about entrepreneurship specifically. Is in order for you to get a business off the ground, there's so many hats that you needed to wear in order to get there. You had to be, you know, on the weekends, wear the bookkeeping finance yeah. hat for a bit, and you probably did a job of wearing that one. And then you might have been doing a crappy job at wearing the operations hat, you know, keeping things simple and putting some standard operating procedures in place and some processes in place or whatever. And you avoid that because that's not me. I'm just a people guy, right? So you start to argue now for your limitations. And I always want, like when I'm working with clientele or people are in, you know, asking me questions, just the way that they frame a question, I'm like, no, you're arguing for an identity that isn't really you. Because at your core, there's no you. There's just a set of traits and attributes, qualities and abilities. You just keep on bringing the same traits into this form that you call you all the time. So you asked a specific question around how do we start to do this? Well, we're already doing it. We're already going through the process. Now, you know, if someone wanted to apply this, if a contractor wanted to apply this in their life right now, well, break down your, look at your business. What's the area that you avoid right now? What's the one that you kind of ultimately wish that you had developed skill set in yeah. and you really want to in order for you to get your business from 3 million to 10 million, I can tell you there's really two things that you're going to need: way better leadership and way better operations running inside your business. Because there's nothing really new. If you've got a business that's gotten to 3 million, you've got a bunch of repeatable marketing and sales that's already there. Just don't be stupid. And don't bloat it up.
Totally.
It's actually one of the rules of peak performance. One of the rules of peak performance is subtract, remove, delete. When I'm looking at working with anybody, I'm looking at what can I remove? What can I subtract? What can I delete? Not what can I make you do more of? What can I pile onto your plate? Usually there's a bunch of in your backpack that we need to unpack and take out in order for us to get to the next summit. Okay. So, you know, when you're looking at, hey, like what parts of my business would do I need to level up in that I've avoided? Maybe it is leadership. Okay, well, now you might have the starting point of where you could develop a stronger character, a stronger identity in that area. Now, who inspires you? Is there a leader out there that the way that they communicate, the way that they encourage other people, the way that they hold people accountable, but they're not
totally
about it? Who inspires you? And I would even go to the point of, this is what Kobe did a great job of. I mean, I've said this for such a long time. There's probably no human on the planet, no biologist on the planet that knew more about the Black Mamba snake than Kobe did. He went and he researched it. Once we kind of really settled in on that, I'm like, no, you need to learn everything about it. How often does it shed its skin? And then we used that entire, this is what, so right now there's a documentary that's coming out on CNN. By the time this airs, it'll have already aired. And I'm featured heavily in episode 2, where I talk about the Black Mamba. And so CNN Originals and HBO have done this documentary. And in it, I share like how we actually organized how he viewed his goals for the season through the molting period of a Black Mamba's snake.
So interesting.
So the first quarter of the season, because that's about the molting period of its skin. And then the set, like, that's because now we're going to shed that skin. And then when you're going into the playoffs, that's a brand new skin. And how does that new shape look for you? Mm. Anyways, like, that's the level of specificity. The alter ego that I used as a parent, right? Brand new role in my life. 11 years ago, Molly was coming along. And I was like, okay, this guy who's even right now, like, this isn't the only version of
for
Tom.
Sure.
I'm a challenger personality type. And I'm a challenger. Why? Because I'm only here to resonate with about 1% of the population, right? Like, if you want someone who everyone's going to like their shit and share it, then go and get Mel Robbins. Go bring on Tony Robbins or something like that, okay? Because I'm not here to placate to that group of people. Yeah. But is the challenger version of me the only version of me? No. So my source of inspiration for being a dad is Mr. Rogers and my own father. Great farmer and rancher, man of few words. But I grew up watching Mr. Rogers. And there's nobody that would describe Mr. Rogers as being a challenger personality type.
Exactly.
Right? Nobody. I've got a magazine of Mr. Rogers right here. I've got some other paraphernalia of Mr. Rogers right here. And so I rewatched a bunch of those episodes of Mr. Rogers and I'm studying, what's his behavior like? So he comes in, he's got very slow movement. Anytime he's talking to a kid, he always gets down on his one knee. You know what he doesn't do? He doesn't hold his shoulders back, right? So like we talk about in the later phases of building out this identity, well, what is it? What do you move like? Because movement is very big when we're trying to trigger a certain state within ourselves. What's the movement like? What's your posture like? How do your hands move? Well, when I'm with my kids, and this doesn't mean that I'm perfect all the time, but if I could just be 20% better, that's very meaningful to a young kid. Mm-hmm. Right. So I say, oh, Mr. Ryan, he always gets down on one knee. You know what he doesn't? He relaxes his shoulders forward because he crosses his arms on his knee when he's talking to someone. He tries to make himself what? Small. When you think about it through the lens of a kid, everything's bigger to them.
So how do you?
You're taller than you, Lord. Talking
how
about.
Have you operationalized that? You've set this up really well for the. I think this is an important question. You've got, you know, you've shared. So. At a certain point, Kobe needs to become the Black Mamba. Todd needs to become this quasi version of his own dad times Mr. Rogers. But then another times he has to become this version of Benjamin Franklin and the author I've forgotten about. You're creating these characters. And to go back to the comic book, there, like, what is the phone booth moment in reality? Like, if I need to become Benji the sales savage for a certain moment, is there a ritual? Like, do we sit? Is it a
Absolutely.
Meditation? Is it a quick visualization? Do we say a mantra to ourselves? Like, how do we, what's the phone booth moment in the flesh?
All of that. Okay. All of that is. Okay. So, like, it's not just one, it can be any one of those things. But for example, the phone booth moment for the promoter version of Todd was the actual office chair, where I was getting down back then to actually pick up the phone. There's some other guys that are listening right now where you had to pick up a phone back in the day. It wasn't just beep, boop, 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 boop with an iPhone or something. So it was that chair. Super Richard, which was that alter ego, he lived in the chair. And before I got into the chair, I had a pair of non-prescription glasses just like this. And I went to Lens Crafters mall in the West Edmonton Mall, and I bought a pair of non-prescription glasses. Why? Because it's like a prop. It's the inverted version of Clark Kent. Mm-hmm. You know, he put them on to be the mild-mannered version. Superman did. I put them on to become Super Richard, and I practiced that, right? And so what happens is after a while, that arm of that glasses, if someone's just listening, I'm taking my glasses and I'm being very intentional with how I put them on, that becomes like a switch on the side of my head. And when I'm flicking decisiveness, I'm flicking confidence, I'm flicking being more articulate, and I'm drawing in the energy of my heroes, Benjamin Franklin, Joseph Campbell, Superman. And I practice like even the breathing of bringing them in. Now, when I look at, there's so many other ways that I would work with someone on. For some people, like I get very motivated if I imagine Mr. Rogers and my own father standing behind me. Because if I say I'm going to honor their traits, well, then I better honor
totally
them. And that's a really important part of the method that I unpack in the book.
Yeah.
One of the things that's lost nowadays is this idea of honoring something. There's very little honor that's out mm-hmm. there, but it is something that is built into the human psyche for us to honor things. That's why ritual is so important. And we've lost the rituals of going from boy to man nowadays, or we've lost the ritual of going from girl to woman nowadays. We just expect people in this amorphous zone of teen to figure it all out. No, I'm creating a moment for my son where we will go away and we will do some activities together. And the whole point of that experience for him is for him to transmorph into now you're becoming a man.
I love the idea of ritual. And I think, you know, for someone, it could be as simple as you're a watch guy and you put your watch on every morning, the feeling of the links over your wrist. And then the clasp closing is like, boom, I'm now this person. I was this other person 5 seconds ago when I was getting out of the shower and toweling off. Now I'm this person. Right. And I think these micro moments, and you do have to self-create them for yourself. And I bet you for the first 5 times you do it, you're like, this is goofy. Like, what am I doing? But then all of a sudden it becomes a thing for you, and it's very actionable. Like, this is, I'm not making this up, like it becomes very, there's a lot of utility in these moments because it's that frame shift. And sometimes you need to mark it with something physical, the glasses, the hat, the whatever.
Yeah.
And I just love that.
Well,
whole
the
concept.
Thing is like the one of the things that it honors inside the book, there's, you know, the kind of like a bunch of core foundational principles that this is really honoring about the human experience that have been both studied heavily and proven to work. This is the idea of being very intentional. Yeah. It's like, I'm not going to leave my life or a version of me up to chance anymore. I'm going to start being far more intentional about the way that when I sit in that chair. Super Richard's purpose is to take this coaching energy that Todd does have, because he genuinely cares about these young athletes. And that was very easy for me to get connected to, because I had run into so many teen athletes at the time who were being sold a bill of goods that was, frankly, bullshit. And so I thought of myself as being a protector for them. Now, what does that honor? Well, I can take a look at my core values. I mean, fairness and justice is one of my core values. Now, like I tell my kids, fairness doesn't exist actually in the universe. But good judgment does, like as a human being. So anyway, the whole purpose of Super Richard was to be an advocate for Todd's stuff.
Yeah.
Cause I'm naturally like I'm built at my core to be a coach or a trainer or an educator to people. I wasn't built to be a great salesperson necessarily. I built that skill though.
Yeah.
And I now have that as a core competency, and I don't need to be, quote, intentional with it anymore. It just became a part of how I operate now.
We got to get you out of here on time, but I have one question to close, and I think it'll be an easy one. What you've worked with athletes and you've worked with business people. If there was, and we've talked about the alter ego effect. This has to be something different. What is, this answer has to be something different because we've covered that ground. What is one thing that you wish entrepreneurs studied and researched and ripped off from athletes? Like, there's one thing that athletes do so freaking well that if entrepreneurs did it, the results would 10x quickly. A ritual, a habit, a mindset, what is it?
Yeah, I would say there's a few that are part of our world. I would say one that would de-stress them a lot more is a more of a practicing mindset. And what I mean by that is that anything can be learned and developed as a skill. Entrepreneurs love to wear the label of I am this. And so I am an entrepreneur. And I just encourage people who are in positions of, you know, power and influence, like an entrepreneur really is, that you can, if you approached all of these different objectives or projects or systems that you wanted to build as, no, you're going to practice the thinking of being a very good systems builder in your business.
Yeah.
You're going to practice the idea of giving your team better focus and discipline skills. And how you're going to practice that is just through some of your own personal daily disciplines. And it doesn't need to feel good right now. That's what the personal health and self-help world has really I'd say, given people as an unnecessary weight on their shoulders, that everything has to feel good. No, it's not supposed to feel good. It's supposed to feel unnatural in the very beginning. But if you did accept the idea that I could practice myself into anything, you would immediately remove the weight of everything's supposed to feel good right now. It's supposed to feel natural. Oh, you know what? Like, I've heard Benji talk about how, you know what? Do a couple of selfie videos. But you're like, man, I can't do that. I mean, I'm not as confident as you are. I'm not young like you are, Benji. I didn't grow up in the social media world. And it's like, you don't need to publish them. But wouldn't it be powerful to be able to learn how to communicate a good, smart idea in 30 seconds or less? Or wouldn't it be powerful to be able to get your value proposition across to other people in 15 seconds or less? You can practice all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that's one of the core fundamental, you know, principles that the best of the best clients in the world of athletics do better than others. They have a real dedication to practice.
Well, and that's partly why I hate all these personality tests so much. Some of them are great. They have a use case, but I just don't like things that make it easy for people to label themselves. Because it's just like it's sort of this cute little concept and it makes you feel good and it feels like this really valuable thing. But there's this knock-on effect that you don't get is that years later, you'll be like, well, I'm a high D, high I. I can't improve my attention to detail. It's like, what are you talking about? You 1,000,000%. Like that was a quiz funnel that you did on the BuzzFeed website 10 years ago. Yes. And you're still making decisions around your own personal performance ceiling based on like a few lines of code. Give me a break.
Probably an unscientific approach as well. I mean, the most scientific profiling system that's out there is the OCEAN profile, OCEAN. Yeah. And you're right about how most of the profiling and personality stuff or behavioral stuff is kind of junk. But when you think about it, it's because when you're going through and you're answering the questions, you're like, you know what? Like, I'm kind of that way when I'm at work, but when I'm at home, I'm not like that. Where they become useful or more useful is when you answer them through the lens of a very specific identity that you have.
Totally agree.
Hey, I'm going to answer this as the entrepreneur or the CEO, or I'm going to answer this as insert name of department that I lead inside my business, or I'm going to answer this as a dad, or I'm going to answer this as, you know, in my social self. Yeah. Because you're probably very different around your friends than you are inside your business.
Todd, let's get out of here on time. This has been such a fun conversation. I wish we could go longer. But for our listeners, like, what have you got going on of late? Where's a good place to reach you, contact you? You mentioned this documentary. I don't know if there's anything else you have to plug, but what are you up to these days and where can people follow you?
Yeah, I'd say just right now we're just dealing with the flood of outreach that's coming in because of the documentary. So we're sort of carving people off in that way. But, you know, my home base on the internet is toddherman.me, and that has kind of links off to all of my different world. If people want to share a clip or something that they hated about this interview, feel free to tag me. Todd_Herman is pretty much most of my social profiles. But no, nothing specifically to plug. I mean, I'd love it if people bought the book, Alter Ego Effect. I put my, you know, a good chunk of my career into really creating a methodology that's very useful. And, you know, you use the word utility. It's something that I think about all the time. You know, it, like, practical and it's useful and it makes sense and you can start using it right now. And appreciate the opportunity to come on and share.
Todd, it's been awesome. Thank you so much, man.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.